Hey, what's up, everyone? It's Andrew Bermudez, co-founder and CEO of Digzy, and I'm here with Bucky Beeman, my co-host for the podcast. I love this guy so much. I really, really just want to totally like just slap his face all over my clothes so I can see his face every time. So, what's up, Bucky?
You and your intros, man, you're just odd. You're an odd duck.
Dude, have you ever listened to a podcast called Cult of Mac? Like, it's
No.
all about Apple computers. Dude, the intros from this guy, his name's Irfan Elijah. So I'm friends with Leander, who's like the guy who founded Cult of Mac, and like he's written books about Steve Jobs and all that other stuff. Like I met him, it was random. I've been like reading his books for like decades, right? And one time I'm in see remember of CES, like the year before I met you at CES, I'm a towel. And there's like a big party for like Western Digital, and I'm like in the balcony having a drink, and I look to my left, and then there's like, I keep on hearing the guy, and I'm like, hey man, are you Leander? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, dude, I've like bought all your books before. Nice to meet you. And he's like, oh, meet my wife. And I meet her wife, and dude, they're both fucking party animals. No joke. Yeah, we're gonna have to bleep the little F word I dropped right there. And they're like just partying and stuff like that, and like ever since then, like we've been friends. One of the invest one of the former CEO of Apple, the guy who bought Next Computer and brought Steve Jobs back, is actually an investor in my company. So that's how we got to chatting.
Oh, that's cool.
So today it's going to be kind of interesting. We're going to do current events.
All right.
All right, Bucky. So, dude, I'm reading this. I'm reading the big news of this week, and it's the fact that WeWork's big competitor, Knotel, that's Knotel, has filed for bankruptcy, and it's the assets are going to be bought by Newmark. Now, you know, there's been a lot of people in the commercial real estate world who have always been iffy about the WeWork model, simply because, you know, leasing space and renting it out to others is something that's not new. You know, you have Premier Workspaces, you have Regus, you have IWG who owns Regus. Like we've always had that model, and it hasn't been financially sexy, right? WeWork did do something different, which is like they kind of created this community thing, but they also made really cool spaces, like places where you actually wanted to work. But you know, is this news? Are you surprised that a co-working company who has been, you know, aggressively competing against WeWork? I mean, WeWork, for example, we looked at their financials when they were about to go public, and that's when, you know, like AKA SHIT hit the fan, and we didn't go public because they got dominated by the investors. So, I mean, I'm looking at here, you know, I like the CEO. I like Amol Sarva. He's had various companies in the past, but I mean, does this surprise you?
I guess it doesn't surprise me. I know nothing about the company. First time I've actually heard it, but I think what surprises me more is you said Newmark is buying the assets.
Yeah, well, they actually invested in the company. So when they had raised a round of funding before, they were a backer of an hotel. So
I see.
yeah.
So I think it's just interesting to hear about a brokerage continually investing into different models that may not be the core brokerage business and then just trying to navigate and figure out how they can add to their bottom line and just be a leader in whatever they're attempting to do as far as real estate services. So
Well, you know that CBRE actually has their own co-working arm too, right?
I know I had seen that.
It's
Yeah.
Hana or Hana or something like
Yep,
that.
yep. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, so you know, it's kind of interesting when it comes to like co-working in new ways. I mean, a lot of the on the brokerage side, right? Like a lot of these, especially institutional like brokers, right? They have a team of like 4 or 5 people, and then they make 2% or $1 a square foot per deal, and they got to split it with a house. There isn't a lot of meat on the bone at the end of the day. They have to do a lot of deals. And you know, let's just not discount it. They're very successful, right? Because CB does a really good job about, you know, helping brokers and training their people. But the one thing that's interesting about this is the fact that, let's say, for example, everything went flexible, right? It's going to be hard to make money as a commercial real estate broker. You see what I'm saying? Like
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, you'd actually have to like have some skin in the game, but I'm just not sure how, like,
So
what assets are they picking up?
where my mind goes is a couple places. One is I'm the new mark in quotations of Rochester in a very small way, meaning I have, with a business partner, founded a co-working space, more executive office type space. It has five offices and in a very old historic building in downtown, has the foosball up front, hardwood floors, just very kind of cool office space. And actually it hasn't been financially a good investment because we're not finding a lot of tenants that want to deal with parking downtown, that want to deal with going upstairs to office spaces. But what it has paid off to be is, one, just be early mover in this wave of co-working. So it helps build some PR as far as we're doing things, and that leads to opportunities. Two, I just had a tech company reach out that is trying to do a deal with Mayo Clinic, and they need a space close to Mayo, but they're not going to be here full time. And so it's introducing me to people I would never have the opportunity, I feel like, to meet in my standard brokerage business because we have a creative space. So it's like, is the money in the space itself, or is the money in what it can lead to as far as opportunities? My hope is that tech company grows. I can work with them as they grow. Heck, maybe we get an opportunity to invest. You know, it's just like that's where I see the benefits of being involved in this. And I'm in a very small market in a very small scale invested. So
That is a very good point because I don't know if you remember, but you know there were some really the real estate industry was pretty the commercial real estate industry was pretty upset when a couple years ago WeWork said that they were like rolling out a brokerage arm to help their clients who were expanding outside of WeWork. So like they basically had a tenant come in, and then if they would expand, they would basically rep the or that I don't know exactly what it was, so don't quote me on this.
yeah.
But my understanding and talking to many people and what I had read, unless I scanned it, which I tend to do, guys, so don't hold me to this, do your own research, was that they would basically rep the tenant to go lease space elsewhere, right? Because I mean, I mean, if you're graduating from WeWork, that what are you gonna make? Like maybe like $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 in commission. It just depends, right, on how big the project is. But I mean it, yeah, I mean it sounds like you're kind of like incubating your future client. So I
For
think that kind of
sure.
makes
And that's,
sense.
I'm such a big believer in that if you're on the come up in real estate, because it gives you the experience, it introduces you to people. It's like I tell all my young team members, like, do those small deals because it's beneficial. And I get we want to focus on the big stuff. And there's certain veterans that will tell you know, just hone in and keep your blinders on and just do this certain type of asset class or focus on these activities. And that's where I love the small opportunities. I wanted to also bring up that I was reached out to by a group called the Instant Group. They're based out of New York. They help companies find short-term rental opportunities. So they call me on a building that I actually own, and they have a group that's a big, I think it's a Fortune, I don't know what class it was, 500. They're a big company, and they're basically hired. Even though this company is based out of Wisconsin, they hire this group out of New York to find short-term deals. All this group is doing is calling on internet listings, and I think we're going to get to a deal for 4 to 6 months. That same company that is using the Instant Group hired a big brokerage firm out of the cities to find their permanent location. And it just goes to show, like, services are being offered for these short-term leases because these big companies don't want to deal with finding the space and just talking to the property owners. And the big firms don't want to deal with the short-term transaction. So this company, that's all they supposedly do. I won't say the exact percentage they asked for, but they definitely asked for a very high percentage in what I feel like it was worth for a 4 to 6 month deal, but they got to get paid somehow.
Interesting. You know, it's kind of like you're kind of installing that goodwill up front to kind of secure the long-term client, right? That's what it sounds like.
100%. I'm like here trying to sell the Instant Group and their client on this needs to be their permanent location. Like, I get they're talking to a big firm about other, like, why not just land here and be here forever? So again, offering my space open to that short term, I'm just hoping it leads to catching bigger fish.
Right. Dude, so let's there in the other news, man, is did you see, I mean, both you and I are a Mac users, right? So we use Apple computers. But did you see that Apple actually has released iCloud Passwords extension for Chrome on Windows? So like now, for example, if, you know, a lot of people use an iPhone and then they save their passwords in the browser, so it's easy to log in, log out, et cetera. But what sucks is if you're in a Windows machine, you can't, you don't have access to those passwords because you just simply don't have the browser and iCloud, et cetera. But they've, this was an interesting move. They basically released an extension to allow people on Windows do this stuff, be able to like have an extension that has all the passwords included in there so that you can log in and log out of Chrome, which, you know, Apple and Google aren't on the best terms, you know, anytime. I mean, they're rivals. Google has Android, which dominates the entire world, and Apple has iOS and macOS. So I don't know. I found these interesting. And I wanted to ask you, I'm like, does this move surprise you that Apple would actually allow that? Is it just like allow people on Windows to access their passwords to make life easier? It is a great user experience type thing, right? Where it makes people's lives easier, but it's almost like, I don't know. It's almost like giving a, like Steve Jobs said once, like giving a glass of ice water to someone in hell. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess my mind goes to, and Gary Vee says this, is like the consumer always wins. And so if the consumer is complaining about it, if the consumer is not having a good experience with your software, platform, hardware, ultimately you are at risk of losing that consumer. And so I imagine that this is a move to help keep relations with the consumer at its best.
Yeah. It's still interesting though, because like Apple's like, I mean, they did release iTunes and Windows when the iPod was a big thing. And they also did release Apple Music, but their experiences haven't always been the best, but this is just really interesting. Yeah. Dude, what about these news? Jeff Bezos, effing Bezos, right, is stepping down as CEO of Amazon.
Yeah, I guess it just, to me, it makes sense, I think, in the sense that when you create such a ginormous company, at some point you have to figure out like how do you delegate, how do you focus on where your best strengths are, how do you continually, he's going to still be involved from what I've heard. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt of him being at the table in certain things, but I guess it makes sense to me.
You know what I found interesting was the fact that Andy Jassy is actually going to succeed him, right? And I'm not sure if have you ever delved deep into the financials every time that they report earnings?
No.
And you don't even have to go that deep, actually. It's pretty surface level. It's like, you know, bouncing a rock off the surface of the ocean. But basically, where Amazon makes most of its money, like almost everything, is off of Amazon Web Services. Mm-hmm. And for example, Digzy runs on Amazon Web Services, right? So our whole entire listing service, all our technologies, our lead generation tools, we pay Amazon monthly to rent server space, right? And it's awesome because, like, you know, way back in the early or the late 90s, we'd have to buy servers, find a co-location, buy multiple servers to do all the stuff. And then now you just rent space from Amazon. And Dropbox, for example, started Amazon Web Services. Netflix, the entire Netflix, all the streaming, everything runs on AWS, which is Amazon Web Services, and they kill it. They absolutely kill it. And then what's interesting is Microsoft, for example, has Azure, which is the competitor to Amazon Web Services, and Google has Google Cloud, right? Which is a competitor to Amazon Web Services. And Microsoft's fastest growing category of product is Microsoft Azure, which is their version of AWS. But Amazon has such a lead on this because they invented the space, right? And that guy is actually going to be heading the company. So I'm like really, really excited to kind of see how he's going to transform Amazon. Because they've done some, like, did you ever play Resident Evil, like when we were kids and playing video games, Bucky?
No, I was more Perfect Dark on N64 and 007.
Oh, it's similar to, okay, cool. Yeah, 007 was awesome. But okay, so basically in Resident Evil, and people will know this, the company that basically accidentally created the zombies is the Umbrella Corporation. And the Umbrella Corporation does everything from like toilet paper to beauty products to health products to like industrial stuff. So like basically they're just this massive company that can't fit in one category. They basically own everything, hence the name Umbrella, right? Mm-hmm. And one of their R&D things is that's how they ended up, you know, accidentally creating this problem with the zombies. So if you look at Amazon, right, Amazon has what? They have AWS. On top of that, did you know that you can rent people, like workers on Amazon for like a couple cents per task? So they have this thing called Mechanical Turk. So for example, if you ever seen those apps where you take a picture of like a business card and then they transcribe it and it's super accurate.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's actually Mechanical Turk working in the background. So the scan goes in, the front end, the technology does its work, and then it sends it to a Mechanical Turk worker who then reviews a business card for 5 cents, whatever the price is, per task, and then basically corrects it and then submits it back so that you have accurate data. They started that. So basically any problem that they've solved themselves, they basically turn into a service for other people.
Mm,
so like, you know, throughout like, Amazon does not need that much computing power, you know, from January to November. But come December, you're aft. Like you have to go boom, exponentially ramp up. So what do you do with the extra server space after the holidays? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So they not only do they have that, but did you know that you can order a plumber on Amazon?
No.
Yeah, so they have Amazon House or Home something. They have they have Prime. They're in groceries. They're in this. They're in that. They rent server space. It is such. Most people think Amazon like e-commerce, right? Like I want to buy a toothbrush. I'm going to go there, right?
Right.
But really, it's a conglomerate of all these different things. It's fascinating.
It's cool. That is cool.
Yeah. So
yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it makes sense when you're that big of a conglomerate and you have so much ambition, like what do you spend your time on? And I think it's just him deciding he wants to focus his time on certain other responsibilities within what he's trying to accomplish.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, in other news here, let me just log into my Inman account. All right. So you do some residential. I'm not sure if you do anymore, but I think you're mentioning that you did. I know that you started doing that for a little tiny bit.
Yeah, I still do it. For example, today I was having a conversation with a client that has been a good entrepreneurial client of mine that has grown several companies, bought buildings, built buildings. Anyways, he's looking for a personal cabin for him and his family, and he wants to work with me. It's like,
nice.
So, yeah,
I'll that's help awesome. Out
where I can.
So, how familiar are you with CoreLogic?
So, my knowledge of CoreLogic is, let's think here. So they provided the tech for several MLSs, mainly in California, I think. And they were like, correct me if I'm wrong, the back end of these MLSs. We actually had, funny to say, we had CoreLogic employees in Rochester, Minnesota. I don't know if they're still here for a period of time because they had hired on somebody that had a lot of tech knowledge and he just so happened to live in Rochester.
Ah, interesting. So CoStar, right, is actually, so here's a report from Inman, right? CoStar's inching closer to acquiring CoreLogic. So we know, for example, Andy Florence has built a great company, right? Whatever brokers or the industry feels about CoStar, dude, I think that it's not easy getting to where they got, right? But at the same time, you know, they have been pretty fast actually, the past few years in expanding their footprint outside of commercial real estate.
Yeah.
Right. They acquired apartments.com a while back. They have commercials, et cetera. They, I think, did they acquire a Homestap or was that Scylla? Yeah. I think they acquired a Homestap or something happened. And then recently the Federal Trade Commission blocked one of their acquisitions. But now, and this has been news for about a year, CoStar has been trying to buy CoreLogic, which provides a lot of, like you mentioned, on the back end. I'm not sure exactly. My exposure to CohortLogic has only been around data, like ownership data and like different tools for residential real estate. But they're aggressively trying to acquire the company. So, I mean, I was like thinking about this, Bucky, because like, I really wanted to chat with you about it. It's like, I mean, it kind of, my opinion is it kind of makes sense that CoStar would expand outside of commercial real estate, because commercial real estate is such a fraction of the market. Even though it's huge, it's a fraction. And as a publicly traded company, you always want to expand, right? And you need to show growth for your investors. So then you're probably going to either move into adjacent categories like residential, or you're going to try to do different things. But so they've made multiple acquisitions, but what would it mean? Like, what would it mean if CoStar actually acquires CohortLogic? Like, would that even pass the Federal Trade Commission? I just can't see that acquisition actually getting approved.
So I guess, I mean, where my mind goes is like, I'm just right now on my phone looking at developer CohortLogic in the App Store. And not that there's a lot, maybe they have it under different developer names, but one that tops at the very top, it's called GoMLS. So GoMLS, I go to the description, multiple listing service in the palm of every member's hand. This app was designed to be used by both real estate professionals and future home buyers. It doesn't say what MLS this supports, but my mind goes to, if CohortLogic is then owned by CoStar, essentially they're trying to be a part of these residential markets back end so that they can help with the tech stack that it offers to all these realtors and then through the IDX feeds to the consumers. And if that does occur, I think that will lead to, and I'm not opposed to this, that will lead to MLSs starting to recognize commercial real estate properties better. We list on our local MLS. We see value in doing so. We get leads from it, whether it's residential realtors bringing leads or referrals, or just going out to certain websites and they find a way to contact us direct.
Yeah.
I like that idea of being in the same place through different searches where the consumer already is spending a ton of time thanks to what the MLS has created and CohortLogic has supported.
Yeah, man. But do you think the Federal Trade Commission is going to allow? Okay, so CoStar already pretty much owns commercial real estate listings, right? And other facets like comps and data and all that stuff. They built a great business around that, right? So, but do you think that, like, I can understand apartments.com as a marketplace being able to acquire that because there's so many rental marketplaces. But if you buy CohortLogic, I mean, they have like the digital MLS platform, they have Matrix, right? Which is a powerful thing in residential. I don't know. Like, I can see Zillow, all the other, I can even see NAR going up against that, like saying that's too much control in one company. Because like, you got to keep in mind, they try to acquire, who was it? It was, let me see, CoStar, FTC, acquisition, RentPath. So they tried to acquire RentPath and the FTC sued CoStar with antitrust. See that?
Mm-hmm.
So they not only sued them, but it canceled the agreement. It had to get rid of it because, like, the FTC just said, "Hey, no, you're gonna be way too big, too much control in one person." So that's why I was kind of asking. I'm going, dude, is even if they really got lucky and which I think, you know, money talks, right, for a lot of these companies. And you always have people on the board or shareholders who want the exit. and I just, even if they were, if they got approval from everybody and they were able to acquire CohortLogic, I'm not sure if it would actually pass the Federal Trade Commission. What's your opinion on that?
I know nothing about the Federal Trade Commission, but I understand why that might be an issue.
Yeah, I think it's going to be rough. I don't know. We're going to have to watch this one because, I can see a lot, if things go like CoStar's way, I can see a lot of people coming out of the woodwork, talking to the FTC to no this.
Yeah.
Now here's what's interesting.
Like CohortLogic, you said owns HomeSnap.
No. I don't know if they own HomeSnap.
It says here, Homesnap signs agreement with CoreLogic for matrix integration.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So Homesnap's been around for a while. But I know Homesnap, didn't they get acquired? They got acquired by, who did they get acquired by? Was it CoStar? Yeah, CoStar bought Homesnap.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, and then they try to acquire RentPath, and that didn't go so well. So here's other news, right? Well, I know we're talking about residential here. And full disclosure, you know, we have one of our investors in Digzy is on the board of Zillow. So I'm not gonna share anything that I know that I don't know, because I don't really know. I know diddly squat. We just talk about his advice for our business, Digzy. But so Zillow has shifted to an IDX feed. And for those of you out there that don't know what an IDX feed is, basically it's an internet data exchange. What that means is that the IDX distributes, like if you put listings in the IDX, the IDX distributes listings to your MLS. The IDX, if you're a member, also allows you to display all the listings on your website. So if you've ever gone to a residential realtor's website like Bob and Nancy, you know, Rochester, and then you see you're able to comb through all the listings on their website, even though there's other people's listings, you're able to kind of, it's a good way for them to generate leads and show the market and to help listing brokers or listing agents get more exposure for their property. So one thing, we've never had that in commercial. We rolled that out in a Digzy about a year ago. That's going very well. So if you can show only your own listings, or you can show every listing in your market, and you can show it on your website, blog, et cetera. So you kind of get the idea of what Zillow has done. However, the way that Zillow got their listings, over 600 different feeds, all formatted differently. If something broke, Bucky, from like, let's say the MLS in Florida, they had engineers on standby, right? So they had individual agreements with MLSs, and they had individual agreements with brokerages and agencies all over the country to get listings on Zillow.com.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's been changed to basically just a few feeds from the IDX. What's interesting that I read in this article is the fact that when you are a member of the IDX, you have to abide by certain rules. And if I read it correctly, you have to be a member of NAR, so the National Association of Realtors, and you have to abide by their guidelines. So that's an interesting thing, right? So basically, in order to get the IDX, and this helps Zillow in a couple ways, right? Instead of like piecing together like 600 different feeds, some of them break. If one feed makes a change, adds like another, like half baths or something, like a field, you don't get that data. So it's a nightmare. Imagine 600 different feeds with data pumping through them. Now they only have like one or a few. But now Zillow is basically acting like a residential agent, because they have to abide by these rules to be able to get those feeds. And what does that mean? There was news already that Zillow was hiring agents for its iBuyer program. So, you know, Zillow buys homes just like Opendoor pioneer this category, where if you want to sell your home, Open Door will buy it for you at a small discount, and then they'll resell it. They'll fix it up and resell it. So Zillow is hiring agents, licensed agents, to sell those properties, but they're not going out and trying to drum up, you know, buyers and sellers and become a brokerage themselves. But I found this very interesting. Like, now Zillow, who some agents, you know, are very vocal, like, and some people are vocal about my company, Digzy, you know, people are vocal about CoStar and saying they're trying to eliminate the broker. I don't know if they're trying to eliminate the broker, but it's an interesting move, because now Zillow is bound by the same principles and guidelines that agents are held to. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's I feel like it's muddy waters. I've always found it interesting, as part of the MLS, and which in turn is access to the IDX feed, that we have to be members to NAR. And it's, I think, often difficult off the top of your head when you're a member of an association to pinpoint multiple benefits of being a part of an association. So I think associations across industries are going to have to continually work to try to provide value to the consumer, the end user. And I don't think forcing people to do so is ultimately the best solution. I think it's, it's definitely interesting as to how those data feeds work and how you gain access and what you have to pay and how you're going to approach that.
Yeah, that's true. Interesting times, man.
It is.
Interesting. Let me see here.
I got one for you.
Yeah.
Did you see the headlines of, is his name Sam Zell and what he said?
No.
All right, let me pull it up.
Did you say Denzel? I love Denzel.
I wish. No, Sam Zell. Sam Zell.
No, I don't know that is.
Sam Zell. He's an American billionaire businessman. This has come from Wikipedia. And philanthropist, a former lawyer. Zell is the founder and chairman of Equity Group Investments, a private investment firm founded 50 years ago. Net worth $4.7 billion as of October 2020. Sam Zell, let's see, what did he say here? Okay, 4 days ago. Billionaire investor says buy office and urban REITs and avoid big tech. Billionaire investor Sam Zell is bullish on real estate despite COVID. He does not buy into work from home hype and expects urbanization to continue for decades to come. We explain why this is a historic opportunity for REIT investors looking for portfolio ideas like Sam Zell did an interview with Real Vision to discuss his thoughts on current crisis. In case you didn't see him, Sam Zell, he's a founder of Equity Investments, EQC. Let's see. He was the biggest buyer of properties in the 70s when commercial real estate was priced at a fraction of replacement costs. He did this again in the 90s when the U.S. suffered severe crisis. So what do you think?
I don't know, man. That one's a rough one. I just haven't seen, unless you're doing like a back-end deal where like you're getting like some good pricing on an office building. I mean, there's reports out there, and I've looked at the data, that right now office buildings are like, the occupancy is like 25%. Yeah, that doesn't mean that people aren't paying leases on the balance of that, but like physically people working out of the office is around like 20-25%. And you have like companies like Dropbox, and he says stay away from tech, but you have companies that have realized that, you kind of like don't need that much square footage to actually operate. Of course, that is a loaded term because, if you're a law firm, you can't all work remotely, right? There's some heaps of data of digital files that you kind of have and sensitive files that need to be secure, and being at home doing a VPN to access those files adds like another like 50% of time to be productive. So that means that your productivity has been chopped in half. But, I just haven't seen the prices of commercial real estate on the office side come down reasonably enough where it sounds like a good deal. I really look at it like the stock market. You have internal intelligence, you have intuition based on what you know and hear, kind of where you see the puck going, and you go, hey, okay, is this overvalued or not overvalued? And even if it's fair valued, what do I see the value of this going forward, right? That's why, I'm an investor in Tesla, but that's why Tesla is like such an impressive company, because they've already been working on energy solutions, for a long time, and those haven't even popped yet. And now like they're creating all these batteries and innovating on the battery side, et cetera. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of these like up and coming battery companies get acquired by Tesla, right? But that's kind of like the thing is like, I haven't seen office, like even owner user buildings. Like I just have not seen the prices drop enough where imagine if you have 25% physical occupancy in a building and you're still in COVID, like how long it's going to take for workers to get reacculturated to feel safe coming into the office. I think a minimum of 18 months. So I don't know, man. I don't buy it. Your thoughts?
I think that, I like his quote here. If you move nowhere, Iowa, it's 5 o'clock every day. And that And what do you do at 5 o'clock? Go across the street to the pig farm. We are social animals, he says. So he just doesn't buy into the end of urbanization, which urbanization to me is more than just office. Mm-hmm. And so I agree with you. I think there is some contradicting feelings I get as to will people be in a physical office, and is the occupancy of these office spaces going to ever get back to normal? And I think it's a long road ahead. But if you're in the buy and hold process like he probably is, then maybe you can outlive this downturn that could be for some foreseeable future. In our market, we're already seeing our largest employer, Mayo Clinic, leave office spaces or state that they're not coming back to them once their lease is up. So I think it's even more difficult in the smaller to mid-sized markets. I probably would buy more into his thesis in the larger markets, because people will continually want to live, work, play close to where they do all their activities.
Right. Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah. It's an interesting one. We're going to have to watch it. I, a lot of times when I read stuff like this, you know, I don't respect a lot of these people. I mean, obviously they've gotten to where they're at, by being intelligent and working really hard and, you know, being creative. But sometimes, you know, I can really tell that it's much more of a PR stunt trying to close a new fund for some investment purposes, or trying to pioneer or win fanfare for a certain campaign or initiative that they're putting through. So I try to look at that and look, if buildings are physically occupied 20-25%, why are prices still the same? You know, seriously, you know what I mean? Shouldn't we get a little bit of a discount
because
on that?
Leases didn't end 2021.
Yeah, right. All right, man. So this has been fun, Bucky. Thank you for going over the news with me. If you're watching this or listening to this, please make sure to subscribe. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking at this on YouTube, please leave a comment. Throw a thumbs up if you like it. Also, hit the bell icon so that way every week when we're releasing a new episode, you'll get notified right away. And you can listen to us during your lunch or your drive or whatever. I don't want to know anything else that's inappropriate on how you listen to our content. So, Bucky, see you next week, man.
See ya.
All right, bro. See you later. Bye.